This is Y-Tune Shuffle.
Y-Tune Shuffle, it's the music that informs our lives.
The rules here are that there are no rules other than just bring in your music, hit play.
We get to pick your brain about why those songs.
Hey, Jude.
I walked down the aisle to that song. Oh, tears, tears, tears.
Welcome to Y-Tune Shuffle, a celebration of the music that inspires our lives. With your hosts, comedian and radio personality Maggie Mayfield. And Hollywood's secret weapon, David Earl Waterman. This is Y-Tune Shuffle.
Hi, David.
Maggie.
How are you?
Well, I'm still kind of psyched about the little movie we did this week.
I know.
We got to be like, we were really acting in a real studio and with
that
real.
Was an incredible space.
Yeah. Mark Rosella, our guest last week, you know, directed us in a little movie.
He was amazing.
Maggie plays a great cop.
You play a great cop.
We should have been cops maybe in another life.
Maybe that's what we should do on the show.
It's amazing.
Good cop, bad cop.
Yeah.
I love how people, I posted those photos on Facebook and people were like, are you the good cop or the bad cop? I don't know. I'm like, just wait.
Yeah.
I'm not either cop.
Listen, spoiler alert, Maggie is the bad cop. She is badass.
And
you know,
we're both cannibals.
Yeah. That's, you'll see it, hopefully.
Oh my God, it was actually really funny. Like, the whole video was actually very, I laughed.
Well, it's for a Project Greenlight submission, and like I said, our friend Mark Rosella was producing it.
I think that was episode 13, so.
Episode 13.
Okay. So now we are up to 15.
This is episode 15.
Or 16.
Or 16, something.
I don't remember.
But it's Y-Tune Shuffle. It's fun.
We're so happy to be here.
And our guest today, another Midwesterner from Chicago area.
Can I check in with you and like what else you've been up to?
Yes, please.
What have you been up to?
I bought a new bicycle.
Congratulations.
Yeah, I had one of those old school beach cruisers, mm-hmm. which was nice and looked really funky and cool and got a lot of compliments, but it was like 10,000 pounds and I'm now using my bicycle to commute.
Oh.
Yeah, I put my bike on the back of the car and then I drive halfway to work and then the other half I ride my bicycle. So
wow.
I needed to upgrade. I went on Craigslist looking for like a hybrid mountain bike type deal. Mm-hmm. I found an old cop bike. Like
what?
The bicycle cop.
Oh, yeah.
It says police on the crossbar.
Oh, my God.
And it's got the bags on the back for my supplies and my business work. So I'm like riding my bike, enjoying the great weather in SoCal and the expanding bike paths. The more bike paths we have, the happier I think I'll be.
Wow.
That's been my week. It's been about the two-wheeled.
When you ride, do you put in headphones?
No, I don't. I'm actually trying to keep like activities more kind of holistic. Like I'm on my bike looking around at stuff and there's life happening. And I'm also worried about like, you know,
traffic.
Car chases.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
You know, it's pretty hairy. Even on bike paths, most of them still are kind of on the street. They're just like marked.
But still, you're part of the traffic. You're part of the flow of traffic.
Yeah.
My mom rides her bike every day to work. She only goes about 2 miles, I think, one way.
Mm-hmm.
But she's been hit twice now within the past year. Isn't that crazy?
Well, I've been riding a bicycle in New York and in New York City and Boston.
Scary.
Yeah, and it's not a surprise. I mean, that's part of what I think you expect is that there's going to be some kind of an accident. It's the doors that come flying open.
Yeah.
That's got me twice.
Really?
Yeah, like the door driver's side door comes open and I'm just like, bam, nail it. And
you nail the door?
Yeah. Hit it. Yeah.
Does the door ever come off? I can't imagine it would.
No. I mean, I've never done damage to the car, per se.
To you.
Yeah. The one time that it was really critical was in Cambridge, Massachusetts, and I went over the driver's side door, did a belly slide on the asphalt, and there was a car that was coming behind, and the car finally stopped. My feet were underneath the axle to the front wheels. Like, had it gone any further, my body would have made contact with the undercarriage of that car. What a day.
Oh, my God. Were there tears? Everyone, oh, my God.
And that night, I listened to the Rolling Stones Undercover of the Night, or Knives, I can't remember. Undercover of the Night.
You couldn't move for the next 5 days.
No, yeah. I couldn't.
Oh, my God. Yeah, what a story.
What about your week? And your week?
David,
yes.
This has been a great week for me.
Oh, good.
I just started my first show, my first open mic show at the Copper Still.
Mm-hmm.
And I've got 3 more weeks to prove to the bar that I can make it work.
What?
So basically what I need to do is is get more butts in the seat to watch the show. And I've got some super cool ideas for audience members to come in and come sit. And I'm thinking about making it more of like a game showy feel to it. So comics can come in and get their 5 minutes for free and won't have to pay, which is unheard of in this town.
Totally unheard of.
And so what I want to do is get more audience members in there and come up with cool restaurant packages. So they're like, look, it's a date night for two. The show starts at 8:00. It's a free comedy show. And, you know, the food special for $30, you can get these two appetizers and two drink specials, whatever is on special. So $30 for two people on a date. And a free comedy show with the chance to win some prizes, and then the comics competing for prizes as well. So I think it'll be this pretty bizarre, unique experience that you just won't find anywhere else in LA. So,
do you think that they would let you put tables, like little rounders? Do they have little tables that can go by the chairs?
Like little, but I plan on stopping in there today to see what we can do.
So the food can come in?
Yeah.
And it's called Challenge Mike.
The Challenge Mike.
How's the challenge work?
Comics will come up and they have 5 minutes. You can do material. I recommend doing new stuff, but really it's supposed to be a very safe space to be uncomfortable. So you reach into this challenge bucket and pull out a little piece of paper that has a word, a phrase, a movie title, something to like get your brain started. They should be generic enough that you can tell a story or, you know, hopefully feel strongly about this word or movie or phrase or music or whatever it is. So, and then you get 5 minutes. And if you weave into material, I mean, ideally that's what's supposed to happen so that you get to really exercise. Because I don't think you have a chance as a comic in LA to exercise if something happens while you're on stage. Like, how do you navigate that and not to panic and just go with the flow? Well,
what I love about the show is the challenge, Mike, is that – it's safe, and it's where those rooms really can provide for the audience the opportunity to watch the creative process, because that in and of itself is entertaining.
Yeah,
you know, and to be up there and to draw something and think, oh my God, I got to talk about something here.
Yeah,
you know, I've got to make something up related to this particular word or phrase.
And just for the record, too, it was really hard for me also going up there. And I know you were in the beginning. I wrote all of the stuff that was in that bucket. So I just went to the audience and said, hey, give me something. And I got orthopedic pillow. And I thought, oh, my God. Okay. Well, what do I know about that? And it was like, okay, don't panic. You know, like you're setting the example on the bar here. Like even if I messed up and said nothing about a pillow, the point is to say something and it's supposed to be hard, you know, and it was hard and it wasn't easy for me. And you just kind of, you're like, okay, well, I'm a funny person and whatever I say, eventually we'll find the joke, you know, like we'll find it eventually. So
the Copper Kettle Wednesday nights,
the Copper Still on Beverly
Boulevard in Koreatown. Excellent neighborhood.
It's a beautiful space. And there actually is
beautiful space.
Parking behind the restaurant.
And on the street.
And on the street as well.
And the metro is right up there on Vermont. I mean, even if you took, I think I saw.
Beverly and Vermont.
You can just walk. It's a few blocks from the metro.
Yeah.
Yeah. I want to help you promote it.
Thank you.
Yeah. Yeah.
Absolutely. Yeah. We'd love to have you. I mean, you're one of my favorite. You're one of my favorite people in this town.
You're not getting rid of me. Okay. I for my sake, I want this to be a regular thing because that's like such a, I'm not motivated to do a lot of stuff. I'm tired, for quite frankly, but that, you know, Wednesday was really awesome. That show is great.
And it's only
going
to get better. I know there's so much more that I want to do with it. So.
Well, I'll be there Wednesday and what I can do, try to, you know, get some people down there in the seats.
Yes.
Awesome.
So our guest today, also one of my favorite people, I don't know if he knows this, but I kind of consider him a comedy mentor and how to navigate this town. I don't know that I've ever really told him this, but he really is just one of the nicest guys in the city. He's so funny and he's so talented. And I'm really excited for you to talk to him.
I'm looking forward to it. He's doing some comedy in some pretty amazing locales.
Yes.
Way outside of LA and the country.
And
so
his Fave Five is really great. So let's get into it with Ken Garr. You're in my studio now.
Uh-oh.
Ken Garr's in the studio, David, and I'm really excited because he runs a podcast that started about the same time as ours, and it's like 10 times more successful.
No. I'm so happy for Ken and his success. No. I mean, no, even though we started the same time, you deserve to be much further along than Y-Tune Shuffle.
Well, it's about sex and dating, so.
There you go. And music is a second banana.
Yeah.
No pun intended to sex and dating. Yeah. Well, no, seriously, congratulations.
Thank you.
And thanks for coming on Y-Tune Shuffle.
Of course. Yeah. I was so excited to do this.
Yeah.
Talk about your podcast.
So,
this is about you. This is going to be fun for you. An hour of nothing.
You guys
Ken.
Can just go ahead and leave the room. I'll just talk about myself for the next hour. It's what I do best. So I've got a podcast called Benched, and I do it with Bridget Fettesy. Bridget is the Playboy advisor. So she writes all of the sex and dating advice columns for Playboy. Mm-hmm. And we were talking one day about how we're both in our late 30s, we're both divorced, and we're both trying to date in Los Angeles. And we're like, well, there's a podcast. And so what we do is each week we kind of have a through line in regards to like talking about our dating lives or lack thereof, or kind of like what's new. We call it check-ins. And then we have different guests that are at various points in their relationships. So we have people that are newly in love, people that are recently broken up. We have people on the verge of breaking up. We have experts that come on.
That's going to be a weird episode. I hope that you don't listen to this, honey, but I'm planning on dumping you later tonight.
Funny because you're just like, we actually had a couple on and they just started fighting on the podcast.
Oh, wow.
And I literally had to intervene and be like, okay, well, like, let's let him get his thoughts out and let's, you know, and then now you give her. Yeah. And then like a week and a half later, they're like both texted me like, yeah, we're done. I was like, kind of saw it coming.
Wow.
Yeah.
So you bring people in. How do you find the people to come in and do the show?
Well, a lot of them are just kind of people that have either, you know, reached out or, you know, have had some questions, like we do a mailbag. And then other people are just kind of like friends of ours. So yeah, I just had my friends Kate and Matt on. They've been married for 15 years. They've got two kids. They've got like this rock solid, amazing marriage. And I'm like, these are like unicorns in Los Angeles. Like, we got to talk to you. And it was really great because, you know, especially after you've been divorced and kind of like getting back into the dating world, you kind of lose hope a little bit and you lose kind of sight of what's important. And Kate and Matt were like, I put Kate first. I put Matt first, no matter what. And you're like, oh, yeah, that's right. It's like, it's not always about you. You know what I mean? It's, you know, yeah, I know. Right.
Well, how did the relationship between you and your co-host start?
So she's a comedian as well. And so we've known each other for about 3 years. And, you know, one day we're sitting at the Comedy Store, you know, on the patio there, just talking about dating and, you know, how hard it is and, you know, kind of the trials and tribulations. And, you know, she's like, I've been thinking about doing a podcast. And I had two, but I didn't want to just do a podcast just to do one. Like, I wanted it to have meaning. I wanted it to, you know, there to be an educational aspect to the content. And so so we gave it a shot. And, you know, we've just been really lucky to have a great audience that, like, sticks with us every week. And, you know, every week they like to hear the horrible dates I've been on, or Bridget likewise, you know. And so, it's been cool. We've been really, really having a great time with it.
So you've been out in Los Angeles for 3.5 years?
Yeah, 3.5 years. I moved from Chicago.
And how's it going?
I love it, yeah. You know, it's so funny because I see a lot of people that come out here, and I tell everyone that L.A. is designed to get you to leave. Mm-hmm. Like, that's what I say to everybody. Mm-hmm. I say it's expensive. People are rude. The traffic is awful. Yeah, the weather's great. But after like a year and a half, you're like, no more sun, please, God in heaven.
Yeah. Right? It does. Yeah, weirdly, it does get that way.
I just want to see an orange leaf, you know?
It's gray outside. Hallelujah.
Yeah. Like, oh, I heard it's overcast. Like, thank God.
You know? And from Chicago and myself, upstate New York. Maggie, you're from New Jersey. I mean, we're kind of over that kind of weather, but out here it's like a welcome reprieve.
Yeah.
Really. Yeah. So designed to make you leave. That's amazing.
Yeah. And I think that for me, you know, I had a full-time career prior to coming out here that I left. I was making really good money. I had kind of the American dream going on and I was miserable. And so
kind of career?
I was actually a managing director at NASDAQ. And so I worked on Wall Street in Chicago, and I was doing comedy at the same time. So I was doing stand-up on the weekends and a couple of open mics during the week. And then finally, I was sitting in the office of the CFO of Buffalo Wild Wings, and I was just like in the middle of this negotiation over something. I'm like, I don't want to do this anymore. Huh. Like, all I kept thinking was, like, I want to get to an open mic tonight and just tell this fart joke. You know, like, that's all I want to do, you know?
I want meaning in my life.
Yeah. Just There just isn't good flatulence material out there anymore.
You bring it.
All right? You produced it, really. Yeah.
That's cool.
Yeah.
That's very interesting.
So I packed everything up and rented the house that I owned and sold everything and moved out here. And it's been great. I've loved it out here. The comedy scene out here is amazing. It's competitive, but it just drives you to get better and better. So
Ken has one of the best reputations in this town that I've figured out so far. Like, I've only been here for like a year. No, seriously, every time people are like, oh, well, do you run with this person or do you know these people or whatever? And when Ken's name comes up, they're like, oh, man, he's so nice. He's just really cool.
Oh, mm-hmm. Thanks. Mm-hmm. You know, for me, it's like I just turned 40 last Monday. And
happy birthday.
Thank you so much. Yeah. And I probably should admit that in Los Angeles. I'm like, I'm really 30 to 40. That's my range. But I just think, you know, I've given up a lot to be here. I'm finally pursuing my dreams full time. And it's like, really, there's very little that you have to do in this business other than, you know, work hard, be funny, and be nice. Mm-hmm. And I see a lot of people stepping on other people to kind of get ahead in this game, and they don't get far. There's a ceiling for those people. Mm-hmm. But the mentors that I have, the people that I look up to, are literally the nicest, most generous people in the world, and that's kind of how I
try to be. Can you name drop a little bit? Some of those mentors?
Yeah, like my biggest mentor is Brad Garrett from Everybody Loves Raymond.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, and so I worked with him about 6 years ago. Just like they pulled my name out of a hat and I got to open for him for a weekend at the Improv. And we just hit it off. And, you know, at the end of the weekend, he was so gracious. He met all of my friends, all of my family. Aww. You know, my parents came to the green room and I'm like, just say hi real quick. Then we'll leave. And my dad like sat down. I'm like, what's your deal, buddy? I'm like, oh, man.
Dads are great. You're from Chicago, yeah. Bob. Big family? Or what's
I've got 14 nieces and nephews.
Okay.
Wow.
My oldest brother's got 5 daughters. I'm one of 4. I'm the youngest.
Okay.
Yeah. So it's a huge family. We have like 23 or 24 for the holidays.
How did the family inspire you to go comedy? Is it a funny family, or
is
your take on them funny?
No, I'm probably the least funny of my family. Yeah, honestly,
I get that actually. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I just happen to be crazy enough to get on stage and try and get it out of my mouth.
You got the most courage. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. But like my oldest brother, he's 12 years older than me. And he's just this amazing storyteller. I mean, once he starts talking and like starts telling these stories, you just sit there and listen. They're like 20, 30 minutes long about, he's got ADHD pretty bad.
Uh-huh.
And so he tells this really funny story about how he's like, oh, I just got to go to the kitchen and get a red pen.
Mm-hmm.
And then like 3.5 hours later, like the house is clean, you know, the kids have got their homework done. And he's like, he walks in the kitchen. He's like, what did I come in here for? You know, but, and I do it no justice, but it's just this hilarious story with all these intricacies. But yeah, I my family's great. Like we bring people for holidays and they're just like, I can't believe how much you guys laugh.
So mom and dad are still together. They didn't get divorced. Or anything,
no.
Like a lot of parents
53
do.
Years they've been together.
53. Wow. If you were to give us the names of your mother and father and siblings down the line,
uh-huh.
What are they?
Well, my mom and dad are Barry and Marilyn.
Okay.
So we call them Bear and Mare.
Bear and Mare.
Yep. Bear and Mare.
Bear and Mare.
And then there's Barry Jr., my oldest brother,
uh-huh.
Wendy and Keith.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, those are my siblings.
Okay. I like having names attached
to
families just to bring a little bit. I don't know why, but to me.
Why are you adding them on Facebook right now? That's weird.
tweet, really creepy. I need followers, man.
I don't know why. I have your brother in there. I'm like, oh, we're getting this hostage crisis here.
This is a show about why, you know, tunes especially, but we need the whole contextual piece of it. Well, that's cool. Good Midwestern, solid family.
Oh, yeah. Blue collar all the way.
Good for you.
Work for a living,
south
damn
side
it.
Of Chicago?
Yeah, south side of Chicago.
The baddest side of town.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Leroy Brown.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Wow, there's a reference.
Huge White Sox fan. Love the White Sox.
Oh, God.
How did it feel when the Cubs won?
I was indifferent, is the best way to put it. I was happy for my friends and family that were Cubs fans because I got to experience that in 2005 mm-hmm. with the White Sox. And I'm not a hater. You know, I didn't throw on a Cubs hat and was rooting for them. But at the same time, I just enjoyed the whole the World Series was amazing. Game 7 is the best baseball game I've ever seen in my life.
Oh, yeah.
And I was happy for baseball because
it
needed it, you know. Yeah. And unfortunately, not everyone's jacked up on steroids hitting 75 home runs, which I was a fan of. Go for it. I think everyone should be on steroids. I wish there was a steroid for comedy. I'd be on it, you know, as Chris Rock put it. Chris Rock said, it's like, if there's a pill that made me funnier, he's like, yeah, I'm buying it. I don't care.
Well, true.
But yeah, no, it's I love my Chicago roots, and it's my number one home. So.
Good. Well, and here we all are doing the Y-Toon Shuffle out in L.A.
Yeah.
Wow. Should we get into the first song?
You brought with you a device that plays some music, hopefully five songs.
I did.
So your first choice, the title of the first choice, dun, 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 is...
One by Metallica.
One by Metallica.
So do we listen to the whole song?
Just no. A few bars of it, just to get, because I don't remember one.
Oh, it's a great tune.
I love the war.
This
battle.
Is this song is about the book Johnny Got His Gun.
The book Johnny Got His Gun.
Yeah, which is about a soldier in World War I who was blown up by an artillery shell and lost his limbs and his ability to see and hear. And now he's lying in a hospital bed, and the book is about his consciousness and his views on war. And so this song was the first Metallica video I saw, and I think it came out, oh my gosh, I'll have to figure out like what the year was. But it was a part of a show called Hairbanger's Ball, which played on MTV.
Headbanger's Ball.
Remember, yeah. It was hosted by Ricky Rackman.
I remember that show.
Yeah, so every Saturday.
Headbanger's Ball.
Yeah.
When MTV played music.
Yeah. So my brother, Barry, is 12 years older than me, and he was into like Megadeth and Iron Maiden. And I needed to have my own band. Yeah. And then this song came on, and I was just like, this is it. This is Metallica.
Just sitting in front of the TV on a Saturday morning.
Oh,
I can picture you like cross-legged too in like the big TV that was a furniture.
Just
you
a
know
giant
what I mean? Like,
bowl of cereal.
Yeah.
Ready to go. Man.
Do you remember what kind of TV you had?
Oh, we had like a 40-inch color tube TV.
Right, right.
You know, we had the cable box hooked up.
On top.
Yeah.
A little cable attached changer.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I loved it. I loved Metallica. I was just a huge fan immediately.
It's so interesting that you felt like you needed your own band, something away from your brother.
Yeah.
Because I feel like big brothers, they're the ones that kind of are the gateway to the music. You know, like everyone's got a big brother
in
some way. And you're like, nope, I reject your Megadeth and I'm taking Metallica.
Well, I took the same genre, right? Mm-hmm. So my brother influenced me as far as the genre goes, but I needed to be my own person. You mm-hmm. know what I mean? And so, like, my brother Keith was like, Motley Crue are all the way. And so, like, I countered with White Snake. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And so, but yeah, like, my brother Barry took me to my first concert, which was White Snake and Great White at Alpine Valley in Wisconsin.
Wow.
And,
wow.
Yeah, there was a bunch of skunks there. At least that's what it smelled like. You know?
It might not have been skunks.
I was 12 years old.
Oh, okay.
It was amazing.
This is awesome.
And then that kind of progressed into like my next biggest influence, which was Nirvana. And the second song that I picked was Smells Like Teen Spirit.
What a great pick.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It changed the world, at least my world.
There was definitely a new chapter,
yeah.
You know, and a representation of people that wore flannel shirts untucked and work boots and you could do that on stage.
The sort yeah.
of like, thanks for the hair and the glam.
Right.
You know, and the weird sort of like T-bone panties yeah. over leather
yeah.
period, which was great.
Yeah.
You know, but now it's kind of like, hey, we all get to sort of identify in this area.
Yeah.
Wow, man, here we go.
Can I reveal to you something really embarrassing about this song and this album?
Please.
I have never heard this album all the way through until I was 29 years old.
Wow.
Mm-hmm.
That's like admitting like you didn't lose your virginity so you got married.
I know. That's what it kind of feels like. I was on my honeymoon and I was literally in a little, what do you call it, like a hut?
Yeah.
In Fiji.
Oh.
And I told my then husband, I was like, I've never heard this all the way through. And he's like, well, we need to change that.
Yeah.
So he made me sit and we just laid on the bed and listened to the whole thing. I was like, that was it?
Wow.
Okay.
Are you still talking about the album?
Yes.
That's the honeymoon.
Yeah, right?
Yes.
Well, you know, it's not uncommon, you know, I think for me, like Led Zeppelin came into my life when I was near 30. You know, and it wasn't that I wasn't, you know, connected to it. I had friends that wore Led Zepp and, you know, even Pink Floyd. Like, there's so much great stuff that you know, you get your genre, you get your period, and it comes when it comes.
Yeah.
You know?
And this was such a time in my life. So, like, when Metallica came out, I think I was around 12 or 13 and was just kind of, like, coming to my own as far as, like, puberty and, like, mm-hmm. you know, that's independence. And then Nirvana came around, and that particular song and that music video came out, and you were just like, oh, well, now music's changed forever.
Mm-hmm.
That hair band, Poison, and mm-hmm. Bon Jovi and those guys, like, you knew that their day was kind of done,
yeah.
and that bands like Nirvana and Soundgarden and Pearl Jam were taking over and taking over music. And I'm not a musician. I played a little bit of piano when I was a kid, but, like, the music isn't that complex, but it was just like the messaging behind it. It was just like this radical idea, you know, almost like when like kind of the Beatles came out, you know, and Elvis came out swinging his hips and like, this isn't right. This isn't Christian, you know, yeah. It just, you know, it's this marker in history where you're like, wow, something's changing now, you know, and I loved it.
Were you living with your parents when
yeah.
Nirvana came out and,
yeah.
and high school at this point?
Yeah, I was in high school.
Dating at all? Or
yeah, I was. Yeah.
Who's your girlfriend then?
I dated this girl, Mary Espinoza.
Mary Espinoza.
Yeah. It was so funny because I met her at a Queen of Peace dance mixer.
Queen of
Peace. Yeah.
It's like
yeah.
a Catholic school?
High school. Yeah, I went to yeah. Catholic high school.
Okay.
I went to St. Reed on the south side.
Peace be with you.
Yeah. And I remember I met this like fiery little Latina girl and we ended up dating for a year and a half and lost my virginity to her and it
nice.
Was like yeah
okay
yeah
and what was your favorite outfit during that period of time?
It's kind of funny because and it's a great
men
set.
Yeah. Listen I had these
I don't even know what the color is. It's like a very dark beige kind of like slick pants, you know,
dark
what I mean
beige.
Yeah, and then I wore this like I still have pictures of it. I had like this multicolored like button down shirt that was like like not silk but kind of silk.
Yeah,
it was
yeah.
like a rayon thing.
Yeah, yeah,
right. And so like and Maggie knows me as like jeans and t-shirt guy, you know, like. And so yeah, I was like this Rico Suave kind of like
shoes.
Oh, I they were like the ones with the buckle on them. Like the,
sweet.
Yeah, the pilgrim leather buckle shoes. I think I got them at the buckle.
Yeah. Nice.
Yeah.
Nice. Okay.
But I did not miss a dance, dude. I loved dancing, and I was always a good dancer.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, so I met Mary Espinoza at the Queen of Peace dance, and we just dated for a year and a half, and she lived in this gang-infested, horrible neighborhood that I used to take the bus down to every Saturday just
really?
To hang out.
Really? Where was that at?
She was in 59th and Washtenaw, and if you're from the South Side, you're like, oh, yeah. I mean, it's basically where the Latin Kings street gang was born.
Oh, my wow. gosh.
Yeah, and so, and it was so funny because I would literally get off the bus at 59th and Western and walk down to Washtenaw, which is about six blocks, and you'd see, like, all these gangbangers just staring at me like, what? What is like? And after a while, they used to call me El Güero, which
yeah, white,
yeah,
white boy,
yeah, white boy,
yeah,
like, hey, Güero, you know, and like for me, I didn't know what it meant, so I was like, yeah, El Güero, yeah, that's me, bro,
yeah,
you know, like, and they're like, this dude's crazy, man, like don't mess with this guy, he's just walking down our streets like nothing, like yeah.
Did you have any inkling that
none? No, and I found out years later, like there were like negotiations made for my safe passage, and like you know, like
wow.
like all these like back alley kind of meetings were taking place, whether or not they should beat me up. And they're like, "Nah, he's cool." Like, all right,
you know, you're minding your own business. You're not there, you know, trying to
I just
pose
want to see Mary,
or buy...
dude. I just want to make out with Mary.
Yeah. Wow, Mary Espinoza. Did yeah. you meet her family and everything?
Oh
obviously?
Yeah, yeah. Because
did they like you?
Yeah, well, yeah. I think it was so funny because in the Hispanic culture, you know, oftentimes they get married pretty early.
Mm-hmm.
And so, like, the first time my parents met them, they were like, well, when these two get married, and my dad's like, when they get married, like, what are you talking about? They're 15 years old.
Yeah.
What are you talking about when they get married, you know?
Oh.
But, yeah, I think they were a little bit nervous. My parents were a little bit nervous because of the neighborhood I was going in. And,
uh-huh.
and but I didn't care.
Little Irish headbanger going down there.
Oh, yeah. I get to yeah. make out with Mary. I don't care, you know?
Oh, God.
Guys will go. So, guys will go to
great
lengths.
You still in touch with Mary?
We were like Facebook friends for a while, and you know, you just kind of part ways.
I've had
stuff.
A few of those. Yeah.
yeah.
Hey, how are you? Oh, yeah, that happened.
They come out of the woodwork when you start making movies.
Wow.
Hey, you. What
I
are
can't
you doing?
Wait for that. Yeah. Cool, man.
So I grew up on the South Side. It's a huge part of my culture, and my father and all my family are firefighters, and so you have to live in Chicago, and so. What happened was the South Side and Chicago for itself is still very segregated.
Mm-hmm.
There are black neighborhoods and white neighborhoods and Latino neighborhoods, and it gets even like smaller than that. Like this is the Lithuanian neighborhood, and so wow. when I was around 12 or 13, a black family moved into our neighborhood,
mm-hmm.
And we were in an Irish Catholic neighborhood, and they Irish Catholic flocked out of the neighborhood, and it became a black neighborhood. And I remember coming home one day, and I'm like, Dad, we got to go. Like, there's black people in our neighborhood. And then all of a sudden, he just, like, gave you that look like, that's not what we're about, you know, mm-hmm. which I've always admired and respected out of my father. Is
that's
the fact
amazing.
That,
that's great.
Yeah. Yeah, he doesn't have, like, my dad was a firefighter in the Cabrini-Green projects in Chicago.
Cabrini-Green, I've heard a lot of stories about
yeah,
that.
For yeah, for 10 years. And if there's anybody that was in an environment where you could, which would breed racism and seeing that type of life, it would be him. And he just, you know, I asked my dad one time, I go, how come you never turned out racist? And a lot of, you know, cops and firemen, you know, being in this environment for so long do become it. And he goes, it's the luck of the draw. He's like, I could have been born a poor black kid. And he's like, instead I was born a poor white kid. I always admired that.
Do you think your dad is more the norm than unusual? I mean, it's so easy for myself included,
sure.
I, you know, all of us, I think, to automatically assume that because a person has a progressive attitude and, mm-hmm. you know, open-mindedness and stuff like that, like, wow, that you rarely hear about it. But I wonder if...
Well, I think I grew up in a bubble, though, because okay. because of the segregation of the South Side, it's like, that's just how it is. Like, that's the black neighborhood, or mm-hmm. that's the Mexican neighborhood. You know what I mean? And so
yeah,
that's
kind of like
just
Boston
kinda,
when I'm
yeah.
yeah.
And
yeah.
then you know, you're walking home from school and you get jumped by a bunch of black dudes. And so, mm-hmm. like, that's just the environment you're a part of. And that's.
Did that happen to you?
No, but it happened to, like, friends of ours. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? And so yeah. then all of a sudden you, like, and that's kind of how racism spreads. You
right.
know what I mean? It's like, you know, it's like, oh, you know, you start listening to the loudest idiot in the world and
right.
you're just like, oh, yeah, no, that makes sense.
Yeah.
You know, but fortunately I was raised in the type of family where we're just like, no, we don't have any, there's no room for that in our lives.
But this really, I mean, my mother married a black guy after
okay.
my dad and mom got divorced. He uh-huh. had three kids. Amazing person, Big Billy Herndon, just a cross between Denzel Washington and Red Fox.
Sounds like he like that's like he sells cars, but
well,
like,
Big Billy
it.
Herndon, he
yeah.
was he owned Billy's Soul Shack, which
yeah.
is a soul food restaurant. You know, really, you know, and I was and my white siblings were immersed into this black neighborhood,
wow.
South Side of Syracuse, New York,
mm-hmm.
South Salina Street, Wood Avenue. And there's no doubt about it. You know, we stood out like sore thumbs and could not walk to the market.
Yeah.
You know, when we stayed at mom's for many years, we were confined to the house or the, you know, the LTD to get
sure.
in and drive over to the mall or whatever.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
those are realities that I'm glad we're talking about it
yeah.
because, you know, to pretend that there wasn't issues or, you know, segregation would be ridiculous.
Right.
But you can survive and you can grow through it.
And know? I couldn't agree more. And I think a lot of times we like to gloss over,
mm-hmm.
you know, the racial history that we have in our country. And I think finally it's kind of coming to the forefront with the new mm-hmm. administration and just having had a black president. You know,
mm-hmm.
I think these are the conversations that we have to have.
And
unfortunately, you know, a lot of times it's just the loudest people talking on the loudest microphones. And I think for people like you and I,
mm-hmm.
you know, that, you know, come from this background of being immersed in this kind of racial society, I think it's important for us to say, yeah, we're at the end of the day, we just want to, like this podcast, listen to some good songs and have some good music, you know?
Right on. Right on, baby.
Peace,
speaking
love,
of.
Man. Peace, love. So my next song that I wanted to share with you was Dr. Dre's Nothing But a G Thing.
Well, I mean, what a great segue.
Right?
Hey, this is Y-Tune Shuffle. This is the magic of this show.
This is it, man.
It connects automatically. Am I right, Maggie?
Yes.
So,
you see, poor Maggie's engineering the whole damn show.
She's not the best color commentator in baseball spokes. So, this came about like when I was about 16, 17 years old.
Can we just listen for a second?
Yeah.
Give me the microphone first so I can bust like a bubble. Compton and Long Beach together make cool when this song comes on. I don't know why. It's like, and I was just thinking about this the other day. I'm like, there are certain rap songs that still sound like they were made this year. You know what I mean?
Oh,
and there's
yeah.
like some of those like old school 90s rap songs where you're like, that was made in the 90s. That should stay there.
Yeah.
But stuff like this, God, it's so cool.
Stands the test of time.
Continue. I'm sorry.
No.
So where were you when this came out?
I was in high school. My neighborhood had changed. It's now a fully black neighborhood. I'm just
Do your
this
parents
white
still
kid.
Live there?
My parents still live there. We stayed put. And it was us and the Conkles who were in their 80s next door.
God love the Conkles.
And that was it, man.
Oh, God,
and awesome. Mr. and Mrs. Conkle. And we just, this album came out and... You know, I didn't get into like NWA, but like this came out and I was just like, yeah, man, this is so different. This is so great. And you know, it was just, it gave me insight into a world that I had no idea, but it was around me. You know what I mean? I was now growing up in a black neighborhood and getting ready to kind of have my junior and senior year. And so my buddy, my best friend Tim, had a 76 Malibu.
Ooh.
Cream. That leather, those leather seats, you know, the plastic leather. And he put a boombox in the back, like a subwoofer in the back trunk. And we just drove through the neighborhood just blaring this and just having a great time. And
awesome.
Loved it, man. It was just like, it was.
Where would you go? Like when you were cruising, what would you guys do?
Oh, it was so funny because like we weren't really into drinking alcohol until like kind of the latter part of our senior year.
Mm-hmm.
We would like sit on my buddy Bill's porch literally for 2 hours deciding where to go.
That's so true.
There's no cell phones at this time, so we're actually having conversations with each other, and you know, we had the girls with us. So there was Chris, and then there was because my buddy ended up marrying Chris, and then there was
Chris who?
Chris Kavanaugh.
Chris. Oh, okay. Yeah,
good Catholic girl. And so, like, all the girls were there, and the guy, and they were like, what are we going to do? You know, and so we would just get in the car and drive to, it was called the PGN Mini Golf.
Oh, my gosh.
Right? And they had, like, they had mini golf, and they had a driving range, and then they had, like, an arcade with the, like, with all the games inside.
And that's where you'd go every time?
Yeah, yeah.
Because
and so,
the other option was movies or something?
Yeah, like, literally nothing. There was nothing to do back then, you know, because we weren't into the drinking, really, so.
Where'd you get your gas money and your spending
Everyone
money?
Gave $2.
Everybody chipped
Everybody, in. Every time you got in the car, everyone just gave $2 to the driver.
Did you guys have part-time jobs in high school?
Yeah. I worked at a couple of different places. I worked at Rainbow Cone, which is super, like, very famous on the South Side. They created this ice cream cone that has chocolate, strawberry, Palmer House, pistachio, and orange sherbet.
Okay, I know all of them except Palmer House.
Yeah, it's like a butterscotch. It's like a butterscotch type of ice cream.
Okay.
And it was like mixed in one thing?
No. So you would take a slab of chocolate, and that was your base. And then you take the strawberry on top of the chocolate. And they had like these, kind of like these, not knives, but like a flat spoon.
Yeah.
And you would just slice it down. And you're gonna have to Google this thing because it's the most amazing ice cream cone you've ever had.
Wow!
They're famous at the Taste of Chicago.
Rainbow Cone's still around?
Oh, for years, yeah, And so
it'll never die.
That was my first job, and so I'd have to take my bike up to Rainbow Cone, and then I'd work for like I don't know $6 an hour or something, and then my mom would be like, "Bring me
good money."
Yeah.
What was your boss's name at Rainbow Cone?
Lynn. Lynn was the owner, and then my buddy's older brother, my buddy Dave Fee. Oh, Ed Fee was his brother.
They all cool guys?
Oh, yeah. Like, Dave Fee was, like, vice president of the student council. He was the captain of the soccer team.
Total Fast Times at Ridgemont High scenario.
Oh, yeah. He ended up playing rugby for the Team USA, Dave Fee did, yeah.
What if he knows my buddy Jim King? He played.
He may. Yeah, he knows everybody in rugby, but yeah. But you just kind of like, you know, I smoked at the time. I smoked cigarettes. So.
Good. Cool. What brand?
Marlboro. Marlboro Red.
Red? Soft or hard pack?
Hard pack.
There
you
go. Yeah. Tap them out.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. And so you would smoke cigarettes and you'd listen to Dr. Dre and your 76 Malibu.
Cream.
God, this is a great show because I'm just like, it's like just like this walk down history. Like, I'm going to call my friends after this.
Yeah, we're in Maggie's bedroom right now playing music and we're all just jamming, you know?
Just chilling.
And we're going to remember it because we're not going to get baked and wasted afterward and then feel weird about each other. And everybody that's listening is welcome. You're here too.
Yeah, man. Yeah, awesome. Smoke them if you got them, man. So that kind of evolved my love of rap. And then this dude Eminem came out.
Man. Oh, my God.
Slim Shady.
Oh, wow.
Let's just load it up. Let's just enjoy it.
Rabbit.
Be a part of it.
This was a tough transition for a lot of people.
Uncensored, guys.
This was a tough transition for some, myself included. I thought, who is this little skinhead?
Were you living in Chicago when he came and did Lollapalooza?
Yeah, I did not go. I've never seen Eminem in concert.
Oh, my God. He's and he's so funny, which is interesting.
This is it. Have your attention, please. Was this the song?
Yep. Yeah. We're going to have a problem.
Will the real Slim Shady please stand up? I repeat, will the real Slim Shady please stand up? We're gonna have a problem here. Y'all act like you never seen a white person before. Jaws all on the floor like Pam and Tommy just burst in the door. They started whooping her ass bursting before they first were divorced. The return of the... Oh, wait, no, wait, you're kidding.
I used to karaoke this.
Really?
And Dr. Dre said...
Hello, girl.
Nothing, you idiots. Dr. Dre's dead. He's locked in my basement. Feminist women love Eminem. We can think of Slim Shady. I'm sick of him. Look at him walking around, rapping as you know what. Flipping the you know who.
Yeah, but he's so cute, though.
Yeah, I probably got a couple of...
So Eminem, the Lollapalooza show, I was lucky enough to go, and it was his first show after being sober for however long.
Oh, wow.
He was so, and like, the grass was tore up, I mean, just because of the Eminem show. I think everyone was at that stage.
Yeah.
Waiting for him to go on. And he's doing his thing, and he's like, oh my God, I was so excited. But he had, like, a fifth of Jack, and he was like, do y'all dare me to drink it? And everyone's like, yeah, do it. And some people are like, no, don't do it. You're sober. It's cool. And
call your sponsor.
So he takes a big swig, and then all of a sudden, like, all this liquid starts shooting out of his chest.
Awesome.
Because he had, like, one of those vests on that went right through. So he didn't, whatever it was, must have been, like, Coke water or
something. What an image, though.
It was so cool. And he was like, well, I guess I can't do this anymore. Oh, my God. He was so funny.
I used to teach drug education to teenagers, for many years.
And teach them how to smoke weed and stuff?
How to make an apple bomb and stuff like that. Yeah, I had this whole side business. Now I have my own vape shop, so things are really expanding.
Moving on to technology.
Yeah, loving it. No, I'm in recovery. I'm 20 years this year. Yeah, yeah. And so I got into this gig where I was going around talking to kids about stuff like
that.
It's
great.
You know, Eminem was such an impactful resource to draw from because he's got such a great, obviously, draw. And such an artist, but his willingness to talk openly about it, was such an asset to an older guy like me. Like, well, look at your Eminem there. I mean, he's even got the same ideas I do. You know, so
right.
How old were you when this came in?
Oh, man. Eminem, I want to say he came around 2001, 2002, I think. So I was 24, 25, and out of college and just kind of like getting my career started. I started off in sales. And worked in the .com era. And
so your first job in sales was with a .com?
Yeah. Company? Yeah. My buddy, my college roommate left college.
What's his name?
Chris Minear.
Okay.
He left college about just after junior year and was like, I'm going to go start an internet company. And so he opened an internet service provider down in Florida where his parents lived. And he's just like, come with me. And I'm like, dude, if I leave college, my dad will kill me. Like, you know, my dad was paying for it out of his pocket with a firefighter's salary. And, and so I finished up and moved down there right after graduation. And we were 22 and owned our little own internet business.
Oh, sweet.
And it was amazing. Like, it was right around the Y2K was coming out. I celebrated the year 2000 in Fort Myers, Florida, with my buddies. We were sitting there looking at our, like, very old cell phones and pagers to see if our... You know, if the world was going to end because of this Y2K bug.
Oh, watching. Like, right, the time, 11:59.
Getting a call from our servers like, we're still here. I'm like, yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah, and I was, I remember I was dating this girl, Becky Marco, and she, this poor girl, dude, she dated me in college senior year. She lived in Chicago. I lived in Iowa City. And so she would like come up every other weekend, drive.
Mm-hmm.
And then I was like, as soon as I graduated, I'm like, well, I'm going to Florida. And she's like, are you kidding me? Like, so I left, went down to Florida. And then I was down there for like 9 months. And then I think I just got homesick.
Yeah.
Becky wanted to move down there. I knew I wasn't ready at like 22 to live with a girl. And and so then I came home and we broke up immediately because our whole relationship was based on distance. So, yeah. And so I came home and then Eminem came on, man, and it was just like, again, like Dr. Dre and Nirvana and all these bands we've talked about, it's like it was so different and it was so, you know, and again, it didn't speak to me because I grew up in a very blue collar straight laced kind of home. I never did drugs in high school or college, and but you know, it's just it spoke to me in that I started doing comedy at the same time. And so for me, it was just like, well, you can follow your dreams. Like, here's this white dude jumping into a historically black genre. And he's just like, I don't have any apologies. I don't care. I'm going to be the roughest, toughest, hardest dude out there. And one thing that I didn't even notice this until a couple of years ago, he's never said the N-word. Not in one song, not in one lyric. Never once has he ever said that. And I'm like, God, it's amazing to be in this rap game for so long and where it's so acceptable to use that term. And he's just like, no, that's not my world. And I thought that was so admirable.
And with all
I was going to say, I found too, like listening to his lyrics now 16 years later, he's actually quite a sensitive human being.
Oh my, so sensitive. Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, for sure. And you know, myself included, you know, before he did that duet with Elton John in the Grammys,
yeah.
Which, you know, brought me literally to tears yeah. because, I, you know, huge Elton John fan, huge supporter of the community, mm-hmm. LGBTQ, LMNOP, you know, I was serious, you know.
Sometimes
and,
why.
But that's a whole other story in another podcast. But it's funny how we can quickly pass judgment and think, mm-hmm. who is this schmuck, you know? This,
yeah.
Is this guy like a white supremacist trying to horn his way into something?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And completely miss the mark.
Right.
You know, it took me a little while to suddenly realize this is a freaking genius.
Yeah.
This guy is a genius.
Yeah.
It took me a while.
And it's so yeah. funny because I remember Oprah would never interview rappers.
Mm-hmm.
She didn't agree with, you know, mm-hmm. the message and stuff like that. And so finally, after years, she had Jay-Z on.
Mm-hmm.
And the message he said to her is, you know, Oprah, we're talking about the lives that we're living. He's like, we're not making this stuff up. He's like, I slang rock mm-hmm. in Brooklyn. Like, mm-hmm. that was my job.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he's like, so, you know, we're talking about the social issues that are important to us because that's the world that we grew up in.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that, especially with the advent of all the video technology, and we're starting to finally see the abuse by certain police. I love police. You know what I'm saying? Like,
oh, of course.
We're starting to see yeah. these examples of this really racist divide that we have in our country. And for Eminem to come through and be like, you know, I'm just a scrappy kid from Detroit. You know, I got an ex-girlfriend who's crazy. I got a kid I can't afford. You know what I mean? Like holy cow. Like, that's
yeah.
amazing.
Yeah, very,
you know?
Yeah.
Very inspiring. He's always been inspiring.
The truth.
Oh, my gosh. That, to tell me that's not five.
No. One, two... I have one more.
Oh, yeah. Thank goodness. Okay. Yeah. These are going great.
I mean, I like these.
Yeah, I'm glad we got one more.
Yeah, this is just for fun. I mentioned earlier I'm a huge White Sox fan, and in 2005 they won the World Series, and for the second half of the season they had like a 12-game lead, and they started losing it, and they were going on a lot of like losing streaks, and all of a sudden there's this famous story of they were on the road one time, I want to say it was like Cleveland or something, and they were in a bar and AJ Pierzynski put on this song by Journey, and it was called Don't Stop Believin'.
Dude.
Right?
Oh, my God.
I just wrecked your whole world. Yeah.
No, I you resurrected. This, every episode of Y-Tune Shuffles, there's typically a song that just, it's the connections.
Yeah.
Man. It's like, I have a completely different story, but yep. it's the same story. It's, oh, wow.
So this song, man, I'll just let it play.
Yeah.
Yes, a small town girl. Living in a lonely world. She took the midnight train going anywhere. Yes, a city.
Just the mind erupts with visual images of the past, you know.
Right.
Just so love. This is what
the
I
song
love.
Still feels good.
Oh God!
And I'll tell you, we play it every day on my radio station, and
dude.
I still every
Why
time
not?
I'm like, turn it up, Mark, turn it up.
Right here, man.
Yeah, here we go. Saw it live in Rochester, an outdoor concert
wow.
venue. Brian Adams opened. Oh, my
God.
Senior in high school.
That
what's
was
your,
it, man.
What's your story on this now?
This
the
is,
White Sox, right?
Yeah. So they were losing it, man. And they hadn't won a World Series in 90 years or 80 or 90 years at the time. And they're just like, man, we got to hang on. And then this song came on, and they just started playing it at games, and it just became our mantra. And it was just like, right, we're gonna do this, man. And we squeaked into the playoffs with a few game lead, and they ended up going 13-1 in the playoffs. They swept the Astros to the World Series.
Wow.
I quit drinking too, but I was, you know, drinking at the time.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
Every night it was like in the bar with all your friends.
Yeah.
And then like
yeah.
it was just this for 14 days straight. All your bosses were like, we get it, you're a Southsider, come into work when you can.
Awesome. That's great.
You know, and you just experience this thing, this you know. And I'm such a huge baseball fan, and it's so funny, like I'll even go as far as like trying to convert people to be baseball. Like, I think it's boring. I'm like, You don't understand the miracle that happens in baseball. A man is throwing a baseball at 90-plus miles per hour, and a guy is swinging a piece of wood at something that's moving that fast, and he's able to make contact. Like, mm-hmm. that's a miracle. Every time somebody hits a baseball, a miracle just happened. You know what I mean? And to get a baseball to physically rise and at least make it look like it's raising, which is impossible in the world of physics. Like, I love it. Anytime you want to go to a baseball game, hit me up.
I do. I'm like thinking, I'm way overdue because almost like, you know, as Maggie was saying, you know, it took you a long, to 25 to hear Nirvana and really kind of have that moment.
Yeah.
This is a horrible confession I have to make to you.
Do it.
I lived in Boston for nearly a decade.
Mm-hmm.
And I only got into Fenway Park once.
Wow.
And it was rained out.
Wow.
I never... Look at the look I'm getting.
I don't even understand your life.
It's I'm ashamed.
The choices you're making.
I can you help me? I mean, you just invited me to a game.
Can
I take? I mean, I get free tickets from my job, so...
Oh, you got
Dodger tickets.
Yes.
All right. Yeah.
Gotta go.
I've missed out on so many cool conversations with guys.
Yeah.
Because I have no clue.
Just what it is. And you play these little games in between the innings. Like a lot of times the first baseman will throw the and if the ball hits the mound, everyone puts a dollar in the cup. And like, it's just like,
I want to go back to college and I want to learn about professional baseball.
Oh,
these
God.
Are my goals.
It's the best, man. And I love going, like taking girls on dates to baseball, especially like, I hate baseball. I'm like, you're able to explain it.
I'm half girl.
Right.
My mother was a girl. That's a Mike Lee joke. I can't think of that. Cool. No, it's great.
Yeah. So that song, they came out, they won the World Series, and then for the parade, went down to the parade. My best friend is a Chicago police officer, so he got to sit right in front of the stage, and they had the lead singer come out and sang. He sang it a cappella, which was really weird, instead of having the whole band because he's not in the band anymore. But yeah, they sang that song, and that was just such like a great time in my life.
Ah, wow. Such validation when the Sopranos ended their series.
Oh, yeah.
With it. Because I kept it a secret.
Yeah.
You know, as I said before on other episodes of Y-Tune Shuffle, like that I was that, I got to get with a lot of guys that were really into sort of like new age stuff and mm-hmm. heavy punk. And I like Journey. You know, it wasn't something I was really, you know, comfortable saying for, you know, my 20s. But yeah, excellent. Excellent five.
Thank you.
Yeah,
before
yeah.
we get to David's favorite part, I actually have an idea for a new feature, if you're okay with
no,
this.
Do it!
Okay, so now that we're existing in 2017, mm-hmm. is there a band or an artist that you listen to that people would be mortified to, like you would be embarrassed if people knew that you listened to them? Like, for example, I am a big Belieber. Like, I love Justin Bieber. But I don't tell many people that because I'll just rock out to the Biebs by myself.
Yeah.
Which is fine.
Yeah.
So
that's your guilty pleasure.
What's your guilty pleasure?
Guilty pleasure.
Oh, well, you know, it's so funny because I feel like there are like people that are like music fans.
Mm-hmm.
I'm your mainstream guy. But I'm man enough to admit that I've been to both a Black Eyed Peas concert and a Justin Timberlake concert.
Yay.
And neither one of them were like, oh, this is what we're doing because you're a boyfriend. No, I went with my buddy Dan to a Justin Timberlake concert. And it was just like, it was like 20,000 teenage girls screaming and just me and my buddy Dan.
Yeah.
And we're just rocking out to Timberlake. I am insanely drawn to talent. If you have talent, I want to be near you. I want to be a part of your life, a friendship, a fan, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And I think Timberlake is one of the most talented people I've ever seen. Part of the reason, and this is perfect to kind of wrap up the, you know, don't stop believing. Like, I have a dream. I have a passion. And, mm-hmm. and there's a lot of people out there and a lot of people give up on it. But, like, I moved out here with a purpose.
Mm-hmm.
And I want to be one of the best comedians in the country. So I needed to come out here to see if I could hold my own.
Mm-hmm.
Can I follow Bill Burr? Can I be as funny as Dan Cook on a given night? You know what I'm saying? And at some point, you have to go. You have to say to yourself, do you have what it takes?
Mm-hmm.
And you got to get out there. And I see Justin Timberlake and his work ethic, whether it's acting or singing or dance, whatever it's going to be. And you're just like, what can't this kid do?
Right?
Mm-hmm. You know?
Don't
and
feel
so,
guilty about liking JT.
No.
And like Brad Garrett seems like a genuinely nice guy.
Oh, the best.
You know, it's almost like you kind of take for granted. This guy's probably really just as nice off stage as you know.
Not even an act, like the nicest person I've ever met.
That's nice.
Yeah, man.
I mean, and I think Timberlake seems to be the same. So that's your guilty pleasure. I don't know. I'm trying to think what my guilty pleasure is. I mean, gospel music.
Really?
Wow. Like sometimes I'll be flipping through the cable and as you know, lately,
yeah.
things have been challenging in the world. more so than I can recall in my life.
Sure.
And, you know, the old rugged cross. And, you know, I don't identify with any kind of faith or religion. Mm. I was baptized Catholic, but never got confirmed or anything like that. But those sort of spiritual gospel songs.
Yeah.
Yeah, kind of.
That's cool.
Yeah.
I've been listening to a lot of classical music lately, too. And I think it's just, I just like hearing the rhythm.
Like Vivaldi and stuff like that?
All of Bach, Beethoven. Yeah. I'm just been like into it. I just set it up on Pandora and it's calming, especially when you're dealing with Los Angeles traffic mm-hmm. and you get cut off. You're like, oh.
Yeah, it's either talk radio, which makes you want to kill someone. Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, I'm just not interested in what people have to say right now. I don't know, it's terrible, but like, I don't agree with it. Or even if I do agree with it, I think you're just, the views are just way too extreme.
Music. Know? Why tunes, man?
Yeah, dude.
That's why we're shuffling it.
All right, now to David's favorite part. I know you kind of talked about this a little bit, but let's relive your first concert.
Yeah, what were the details of that concert?
Where
what
was
happened
it?
That
White
day?
White Snake.
How old were you?
I was 12 years old.
Jeez.
Barry took me, and I think at the time he was driving, it was either a Duster or a Nova.
Either one.
Yeah. And he owned a Challenger, and he used to drag race. Like, he was a gearhead.
Those are all through. Mopars? Or,
yeah,
for sure.
So he takes me to Alpine Valley. Great White opens for White Snake. So, again, my brother Keith had Motley Crue, and I'm like, well, I can't like Motley Crue, even though I do.
Yeah.
I have to get my own. So I picked White Snake because there was this gorgeous redhead named Tawny Catan who was dancing on a BMW in their music video.
Yes.
And I'm like, this is the life that I want.
Yes.
I want to just come home one day and there's a gorgeous redhead just sitting on my BMW.
Right.
And then David Coverdale's in the back just singing this song, Here I Go Again. So I had a White Snake poster in my bedroom, and he brought me to this concert. And Alpine Valley is where Stevie Ray Vaughan died. In the helicopter accident.
Oh, right.
Yeah.
Oh,
and so that's what it's best known for, unfortunately.
Uh-huh.
And it sits on a hill, and we're at the top of the hill, and everyone's smoking weed, and I'm just like with my older brother, who I didn't get to see all that much because he was off living his life. And we just had this great moment of like just being brothers and like watching this pretty much horrible band. And I'm surprised I didn't pick like Here I Go Again as one of my songs, because if you actually listen to the lyrics of Here I Go Again, they're pretty motivating. It's just like, I'm going to get back up and get going, man.
Well, next time you come on, you know, we're going to have theme shows. And I mean, we got big plans for this. iTunes. So.
When you guys get that 80s hair band theme, please bring me on, man.
Oh, for sure. Yeah. For sure.
Your corner of the internet, how do we find you? What are you working on? Anything you're particularly proud of?
Oh, yeah. I love this podcast I'm doing, and I hope that you guys will tune in. Start with episode one, because really it's just an ongoing soap opera of my dramatic dating life. And so it's called Benched. You can find it on iTunes. It's the Bench podcast with Bridget Fetisi and myself. A couple of things I have coming up. You can always find my comedy schedule at kengar.com. And I'm on the interwebs at Comedian Kengar for Instagram and for Twitter. I will be at the Improv in Chicago headlining them on March 30th. And then featuring the rest of the weekend with the very funny Heather McDonald on the 31st and 1st. And then on April 2nd, I will be flying to Iraq, and I'll be entertaining the troops for 2 weeks. You probably won't make those shows, but do something cool and maybe find a non-for-profit that supports veterans, disabled veterans, and maybe just donate some money on my behalf. That would be cool. So that's what I have coming up.
Excellent.
Man. Yeah.
You're incredible. Thank you for sharing all that stuff.
Thanks for having me.
Thanks,
what a great time.
Oh, absolutely.